Good afternoon. The September 24th regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. I'll pause for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the States of America, and to the Republic which stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterward, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a blue speaker card and give it to the staff. If you're participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you're not certain you want to talk, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. And our first order of business is approval of the agenda.
Do we move these items at this time?
Well, we can do that now or we can do it later.
Coles, I would like to make a motion that we move items 8 and 10 from the consent agenda to the regular agenda as the first two items to be heard under regular agenda.
Steve, a second.
All in favor, voice vote?
Aye.
Any opposed? Yes, please.
So Coles, make the motion to accept the amended agenda.
Ross, second.
All in favor, voice vote?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. We had a finance committee meeting this morning, and we had a personnel committee meeting. No actions were taken in either one. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda. A text amendment, zoning ordinance, section 3, alternative standards to section 5, traditional neighborhood districts, 24-004284-ZA. Is there anyone in the audience who's here to speak on that item? Site plan with variance for 8608 Abercorn Street, 24004758-ZA. Anyone here to speak on that one? Site plan with a variance for Point Grand Savannah, Preston Drive, 24004751-CA. Anyone here for that? All right. And site plan with variance for 1100 East 31st Street, 24004754-ZA. Anyone here for that one?
Coles, motion to remove items 3 through 6 from the final agenda.
Bull, second.
All in favor, voice vote.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. There are no items requested to be withdrawn. We do have other consent agenda items. The first one is the approval of September 10th meeting minutes, 9-10-2024. We also have major subdivision Savannah Highlands, phase 9-610 Highlands Boulevard. Is there anyone here that wanted to speak on those items? All right.
Cole's motion to approve items 7 and 9 of the consent agenda.
Bull, second.
All in favor? Voice vote?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So our regular business, we're going to go back to the consent agenda items that we took off the consent agenda, and we'll start with the major subdivision, Hill Durance Tract at 180 Fort Argyle Road.
Afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Brad Clement. I'm from Development Services here at the Metropolitan Planning Commission. The major subdivision in front of you today is off of Fort Argyle Road. It's sometimes referred to as the Hill Durance Tract or Zero Fort Argyle. Both of these things are just placeholders. If you can see your screen, this was the approved master plan post amendments previously. What is before the commission today is the acceptance of a major subdivision because of the dedication of a right-of-way. The plat has been submitted in normal form with the minimum requirements, and my understanding is there may be questions as to how that is documented or additional information that would like to be added to the plat. This is the plat in question that will record the front portion of the property adjacent to Fort Argyle. Again, in conformity with the master plan that had previously been approved, the number of lots being created here is sufficient to make it a minimum or a minor subdivision, but because of the inclusion of the dedication of the right-of-way, the trunk road that will travel the distance of the entire master planned area, it automatically bumps up to a major subdivision. Pending your questions, that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions? All right. My understanding is that we wanted to have shown on the plat the buffer for the residential properties in that subdivision or surrounded by that subdivision.
Madam Chair, that is not something that would normally be required to be recorded on a plat, but given the dependencies in the approved master plan, it certainly could be added. And if you would like to place that condition on the plat, we will send it back for those revisions prior to approval.
Go ahead.
I concur with that, Madam Chair. Great suggestion. Thank you.
You'd like to see it put on there?
Yes, ma'am, and the city would as well.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Is the applicant here? Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to speak on this? Okay. All right. Any discussion by the board? I'll entertain a motion.
Jay, do you want to?
Sure. Motion to approve as amended.
Jeff Fentrick, a second.
Quick question. Do we need to, because we haven't amended it yet.
Approve with condition.
Thank you. I recommend that we approve the petition with the recommended added condition that the residential buffer shown in the concept plan be recorded appropriately on the plat.
Second. Right.
Jeff Ventriga, second.
Okay. All right. Ms. Amick, how do you vote?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Webwoody?
Yes.
All right. I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. The second item was a master plan amendment, the reserve at Savannah Harbor, Reserve Way, Delilah's Way, and Only Sarah's Way, 24-004580-SUBE.
It's me again, Madam Chair, Brad Clement from Development Services. You have seen this master plan before and several of its iterations. This is actually a 2013 reversion to what had previously been approved and platted. So every time the master plan changes and you're accustomed to seeing those in a pictorial form like this, it requires and triggers that this, that master plan amendment be reapproved. What has happened in the past is those master plan amendments did not trigger recording of the underlying legal lots as depicted in that master plan. So they were conceptual in nature, and what staff is reviewing when that happens is density, type of use, and number of dwelling units as part of the larger master plan. Over time, things have changed. There is not a button or application process for reversion back to a previous approved version of the master plan. When these lots were approved and recorded as part of the major subdivision, there were variances and variance dependencies attached to them based on the underlying zoning for the larger plan development. Those variances stay intact because they are riding on the legal creation of those lots. The changing of the color per the master plan and the use and the configuration of the larger plan has no dependency on that what was that which was previously recorded, because nothing that has been legally recorded is changing. So we're changing colors back to reflect what was underlying at the time when those lots were recorded. So the last time you saw this plan was back in May. And you'll recall I stood here with a straight face and told you we're really just changing colors on the map. We're back to changing colors on the map, but this time there are legally recorded lots and rights of way and easements for infrastructure that underlie those lots and the colors that we're reverting or changing back to amending through this formal process. Depending on your questions, that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Is the applicant here, Mr. Moper? Would you like to speak on this?
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, members of Planning Commission, Lamar Mercer with Thomas and Nutton Engineering Company. Brad did a great job summarizing what the request is for, and this simply really is reversion back to the prior 2023 version of this master plan, because it has so much specificity to match what their currently recorded subdivided lots are.
All right. Any questions for the applicant or staff? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And I do have some people to speak. Mr. Mumper, I have your card here. Would you like to share on this?
Thank you very much. I'm Dickie Mopper, and I am one of the current owners of the reserve on Hutchinson Island. And I remember being here at this meeting recently in May, where we were asking for some changes that this board was really not in favor of particularly. Part of it was closing lanes, which y'all were not really interested in. So it seems like this is a really good opportunity to put it back the way it was meant to be and the way the MPC always envisioned it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any questions for Mr. Mopper? All right. I do have two speakers, Kathy Smith. Okay. Gregory Smith.
Yes, sir.
All right. Any discussion? Nobody on. Oh, is there anyone online? So, okay. All right. I'm entertaining a motion.
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Full second.
All right. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles? Yes. Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. Now we're on to our standard regular business. zoning map amendment rezone from CPRMF 225 to Fairgrounds PD 4801 Medding Street.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here. You all upset my plan to start off with the positive news today of the rezoning for the Fairgrounds plan development. I know this is a proud moment for the city to finally bring this to the Planning Commission and ultimately to City Council on October 10th. The request before you, which you all recently saw as a Flume amendment, is now a rezoning request from CP, which is Park and Conservation, and RMF 225, residential multifamily 2 with a density of 25 units per acre, to plan development for the long-awaited Fairgrounds plan development housing development that's coming. You can see the future land use map now represents the plan development status that you all voted in support of recently. And now to change this map on the right to PD. This is a kind of a snippet of some of the pages of the PD text, which has now been presented for MPC staff review. And in looking at it, we were very pleased to see that city staff played a very close role in drafting these standards so we can have some confidence that at least what is intended was put down on paper. And again, in moving forward and hoping that there will be very clear determination and in the developments that are to come. So this is just a snippet of the PD text that is to be approved. And this is the master plan that is proposed. And you can see here the uses are laid out according to their various colors. We have a variety of uses that are going to be permitted here, the full range of residential going from one family, both attached and detached. We have some two family that is permissible here in the standards. We know that we have some multifamily and some townhouses, as well as a number of institutional and commercial uses. And finally, the parks and open spaces. And so this is your master plan. I will not go into significant detail. I'll leave that for Ms. Liddy to come and offer her presentation. But just to review the phases that staff is aware of, the development is proposed over the course of five phases. The first to open with some single family housing, detached and attached townhomes. The second phase that we are aware of are the recently LIHTC awarded senior housing apartment units that are proposed for the development. The third is the sound and film studio buildings or the community exchange lot that you saw there on the master plan, including the Creative Innovation Workforce Center, two recreation fields, and basketball courts. Phase four is slated to be approximately 60 attached townhomes, recreation fields, the nature preserve, the commercial retail facility, as well as some other convenience commercial or non-residential uses. And finally, in phase five, in the indoor recreation building and rental apartments at approximately 220 units, two and three bedrooms. It's staff's understanding that each of these units comes with a commitment to affordability. So. And finally, just to show you, this is an additional map that was included that shows us some standards related to height that can be expected within each of these particular pods within the development, the number of units that's to be expected, and also maximum square footages. So additional standards in the phasing plan just shown over the geographic area. With that, MPC staff does recommend an approval, and we are happy to hand over the floor to Ms. Liddy to give you a bit more insight. Happy to answer any questions, or we can wait.
We'll wait for Ms. Liddy's presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bridget Liddy, Director of Planning and Urban Design with the City of Savannah. And unfortunately, I don't have a presentation. I wasn't prepared to do that, but I can answer any questions about the fairgrounds. I think many of y'all are familiar with it. We're super excited. Up to 400 units of housing that will be provided in the area, as well as some mixed-use development, recreational facilities, as well as a studio space. We feel as though the plan development that we've come up with has been very inclusive of the feedback that we have heard from the neighborhood. In our use table, we have prohibited any kind of reference to any use that has to do with alcohol, which is something that they're very passionate about for that particular neighborhood and for that area. So we were very mindful of that. Where we are in potential, if we have potential issues with height, We do have some standards that talk about tiered or step-down development standards. So super excited about it. And if y'all have any questions, I'll be more than willing to entertain them.
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Liddy or for staff?
Just a comment, because we mentioned this in the pre-meeting, that the senior housing is the second phase, just for public's sake, because there's been some confusion there. But it seems that the understanding is it will pretty much be at the same time as phase one.
So right now, phase one is specifically the townhouses and single family. As you know, we did receive the tax credit, low income housing tax credit, which came through. So that is actually moving forward as well. But phase one is specifically going to be for the single family, but concurrently phase two is being planned. Super excited about it. And just to let y'all know, the delay from when you approved the future land use map to where we are today, we did go through the Coastal Regional Development Commission and did do the DRI, which came back favorably. So just to let you know, we're checking all the boxes and doing everything that we're supposed to be doing.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to make a few comments and commend city staff and MPC staff and the development partners, and specifically the communities in the 5th District who've really been working on this project for a number of years, through many starts and stops, and now we have some real momentum and some real financial backing that's going to be able to produce exactly the project that City Council and the community put forward and was approved in 2021. And I'm really proud, and everyone should be proud of the fact that of all of the 400 allowed residential units, every single one of them has an affordability covenant to it. And additionally, the State Department of Community Affairs has actually kind of given their stamp of approval with money for both phase one and phase two. So phase one, with the up to 50 single family homes and townhomes, workforce housing that received a combination of $3.5 million for some infrastructure to support the workforce housing. And then phase two, 66 housing units for senior citizens, all low-income housing tax credits. We just received that award 2 weeks ago, the incredibly competitive awards. And that's really, one, a sign that the finances are in place, but two, stamps of approval from the state that this is a really meaningful project and one that deserves to move forward, and we're excited about it.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? All right. And we don't have anyone to speak on that. I'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Bold second.
All right. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. Our next agenda item is a map amendment, Kensington Park and Groveland Conservation Overlay District Zoning Map Overlay Adoption.
Good afternoon, members of the board and Madam Chair. I'm Subhashi Karunaratna, a planner from the MPC, presenting this staff report for the map amendment to the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance, Article 7.15, and the zoning map to include Kensington Park and Groveland neighborhood as a conservation overlay district. So I'm presenting both items number 12 and 13. Together because it speaks for the same subject. The request is put forth by Pamela Miller, the neighborhood president, on behalf of the Kensington Park Groveland Neighborhood Association. The request is to designate the area roughly bounded by Duraney, Waters Avenues, and Abercorn and Johnson Streets, marked here on this map on the left. Right here, as the Kensington Park Groveland Conservation Overlay District. The purpose of a conservation district, overlay district, is to preserve the character of Savannah's older and historic neighborhoods, which lack the protection of a local historic district overlay. These districts are established for a public process and standard to evaluate demolition of contributing buildings to ensure historic buildings are preserved and the character of the district is maintained. Currently, there are four such conservation overlay districts shown in this map here as Ardsley Park, Chatham Crescent Neighborhood, Edmore and Chatham Terrace Neighborhood, Duffin Park and portions of the Parkside Neighborhood and Historic Cow Village Neighborhood and the Flatman Village Neighborhood. If this request gets approved, a fifth conservation overlay district will be added to section 7.153, and the map will mark somewhere around here as the overlay district. So the Kensington Park and Groveland neighborhood is a historic district in the National Register for Historic Places since 2014. The National Historic boundary of the neighborhood is marked here with this thick black line. Kensington Park and Groveland is a post-World War II residential area situated along Durania Avenue, just south of downtown Savannah. Kensington Park was established in 1950, followed by the planning of the neighborhood Groveland community in the same year. The layout of both neighborhoods is interconnected, featuring broad widening streets, many shaded by live oak trees. The area has been retained much of its original character and integrity over time. Even though the overlay district is adopted, the comprehensive plan future land use map will not be amended as a result of this. Both the base zoning district, which is residential single family 10, and the existing land use categories, residential, suburban single family, conservation, and parks and recreation will remain unchanged for properties within the overlay. The base zoning district will not be changed for any property in the overlay. The corresponding text amendment, which is to establish this overlay, states that in event of any conflict between the base district and the overlay, the more restrictive standard will apply. The proposed amendment is a representation, represents the extension and application of an existing preservation mechanism already present with the ordinance. Adoption is necessitated by the current rapidly changing local real estate market as the city seeks to ensure the integrity of its historic neighborhoods into the future. The uses permitted within this existing base zoning district will not change as a result of the approval. The approval will chiefly establish the requirement of the Historic Preservation Commission approval of any proposed demolition of a contributing historic resource. Based on that, the MPC staff recommends approval for the Kensington Park Groveland Neighborhood Overlay Conservation District as requested by items 12 and 13. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is the applicant here? Do you want to come forward and state your name? And
hi, I'm Pamela Miller, president of Kensington Park Groveland Neighborhoods.
Thank you. Would you like to add anything?
No, I'm just appreciative of getting to this point. I want to thank the staff. It's been a while in coming, and thank you for being here and listening to something about our beautiful neighborhood. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Just feel free to ask me. Thank you.
Any questions for the applicant or staff? All right, I have two speaker cards. Ms. Isaacs?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF is excited to see the creation of another conservation district, especially one focusing on the history of our more recent past, and we are in support of its approval.
Thank you. I also have a card for Brett Sosaby. Come on up and state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, good afternoon.
Hi.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brett Soesby. Simply as a resident and a property owner of the neighborhood, I just have to say that in general, I'm opposed to this as a matter of principle. I don't have a long, drawn-out argument other than as a property owner, I don't need additional restrictions. That's part of the principle of owning property. And I'll just kind of leave it at that.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you. I also have Brian Blonerfeld online. Sorry if I messed up your name. Are you there, Mr. Are you there, Brian?
He is unmuted now.
He is unmuted?
Yeah. He's unmuted on his end too, so.
You can go ahead and speak if you'd like. All right. I guess given that, do we have any questions or discussion? I'm sorry? I think we probably have to vote on them separately. Can I have a motion?
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation on item 12.
Bull second.
All right. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens? Ms. Whitewoody? Yes. All right. And this next one?
Coles motion to approve item 13.
All right.
Bowles second.
Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Whitewoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. All right. Both motions pass. And our next item is text amendment zoning ordinance section 5.4, section 8.7.24, section 8.4.32, permitting restaurants and accessory alcohol sales in the TN1 zoning district adjoining Park Avenue between Whitaker and Drayton Streets.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission. This is Edward Morrow again. This is a request to amend three sections of the zoning ordinance for the purpose of establishing restaurant uses which permit accessory alcohol sales within the TN1 zoning district. And again, this requires amendments to all three of these sections in order to effectuate the possibility of a second request, which is associated. It's a special use request. So we will get to that. But in essence, the petitioner is requesting to place the red checks that you see in the TN1 column here on the principal use table. And this would permit restaurant uses and ancillary retail for off-premise consumption, in essence, associated with a restaurant use in the TN1 zoning district where it's not currently permitted. And so to look at these three specific sections that require amendment, the first is 8.4.32, which regulates the restaurant uses within our business districts. And so the requested text amendments would add TN1, and it would also indicate that within the TN1 district, these are uses that would be permitted if they are fronting, if they're on a parcel that is fronting Park Avenue, specifically between Drayton and Whitaker Streets. And so that would be the only place within the TN1 district where this particular use would be permitted. Also, in line with that, we would add TN1 under 8.7.24 in relation to accessory alcohol sales first in connection with a restaurant or food-oriented retail establishment. We'll look at the ordinance definitions distinguishing those two in just a moment. And in Section B below, accessory alcohol sales by the drink in association with a restaurant. Again, adding TN1 specifically with relation to Section 8.4.32, which you just saw. I feel like I am missing one. I'm so sorry. Actually, that was the third one. I expected a third table, but it was actually the principal use table. So again, just to look at the effect of this, in essence, we are talking about four parcels that qualify under the requested text amendment. You can see the larger black box here, which outlines the Victorian Historic District where the TN1 district was created to apply. Within that Victorian district, we have other zoning classifications. The one in question, TN1, is outlined in kind of the orangey, light orange color that you see here. And then the red box outlines the four parcels that would qualify, being zone TN1 and specifically with frontage on Park Avenue between Whitaker and Drayton Streets. And so just to show you, we are literally talking about the southern edge of Forsyth Park here, these four parcels. And this would permit restaurant uses in particular, and also it would open the door for the potential of accessory alcohol sales in association with a restaurant use, and also for on and off-premise consumption of that alcohol. The one thing that's not listed here is an association, food-oriented retail establishments. So again, this would effectuate all of those things or give the potential to effectuate them. And this is required in order to move forward with the second petition. So a restaurant here, we see this is an establishment that prepares and serves food and beverages to the public. The use can include table, counter, drive-throughs, drive-in, takeaway, delivery service. In essence, it derives more than 50% of its gross annual revenue from the sale of its alcoholic beverages. And so that's why the accessory alcohol sales is there. We're talking about, in essence, an added use that constitutes less than 50% of the revenue of the establishment. The other significant use talked about here is the food-oriented retail establishment. So if you would put yourself in the mindset of a small grocer, small food retailer that is not necessarily a restaurant, but not necessarily exclusive of a space in which food is prepared and served, but constituting less than 50% of the area of that given establishment. So these are the types of establishments that are being requested to either be established or to offer ancillary alcohol sales within the scope of these requested amendments to the text. And so just to show you, these are actually the four buildings which occupy the four parcels which are subject to this text amendment. The one in particular that is the subject of the second petition here is outlined in the yellow box. You can see this is contributing historic structure at 17 West Park Avenue within the Victorian Historic District. The site is fully developed at present. So anything that would come in the way of modifications to the exterior of this structure would require permission of the Historic Preservation Commission. And there is not a significant deal of room on the backside of the parcel either for significant amendments. It's worth noting that within this district, there is a parking reduction. For the first 3,000 square feet of a non-residential use, there's a parking reduction. And so it would only be at 3,001 square feet that any parking requirement, the owner of that business would then be required to make efforts to supply that off-street parking. Added to this, within the TN1 district, you saw the definition of restaurant. There are some TN-specific restrictions surrounding various uses, and then also in the TN1 specifically. And so what we could not expect to see here is a drive-through, because that is explicitly limited by TN1 generally. Accessory structures must be in the rear yard. Principal use dwellings shall be a minimum of 450 square feet. And on interior lots, permitted non-residential uses are only allowed on the ground floor. So again, this is setting a standard in all of our TN districts. With specific regard to TN1, ordinarily non-residential uses would be located on a corner lot or on a street that's classified as a collector or greater. And then lots of record existing as an effective date shall be utilized to determine the extent to which the corner lot provision. So again, further clarification of what's meant here. So there's some specific requirements tied to non-residential uses in this district already. And this just represents kind of a further amendment of the particular type of commercial uses that could be expected. Again, this zoning district was crafted particularly for this area. And so it takes into account the idea that you have residential uses in very close proximity to non-residential uses. So this is just an addition of something that we would typically kind of see. You will see in the next slides. That this area already has a future land use designation of traditional commercial. So again, the request is not necessarily in conflict with what's already happening on the ground, but staff is recommending denial on the basis that achieving this type of land use allowance through a text amendment is not an appropriate use. It's not the most appropriate use of a text amendment. This is the type of thing that we would ordinarily see by a rezoning or the creation of an overlay district. Staff would recommend one of these two methods, given that there is kind of a changing real estate market surrounding the park. There's actually in this particular block, there's already a number of non-residential uses. So the character of the area is changing. And so just in the interest of kind of getting ahead, perhaps using either a rezoning or an overlay to accomplish the requested allowances. If, however, the board is inclined to support this petition, staff does recommend that the principal use table be amended to reflect L's instead of checks. Checks indicate by right uses. L's are limited uses. And so this would point you to those standards that you see sort of outlined here under use standards on the right-hand side. So that, again, you would actually see, or if you are intending to do this, it would point you to one of these boxes to indicate, hey, this is not allowed by right. There are some other restrictions on establishing this use. And so with that, I'm happy to go into the second petition, but I will note again, the second petition requires approval of this one in order to even create the possibility for it to occur. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Is the applicant here?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's go ahead and hear.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Josh Gellin here today representing the applicant, who is Chris Kingsley is here with us. He and his wife, Farina, are the proposed operators of this establishment. I just want to give some background that Farina is a chef, a cookbook author, a culinary instructor. And so what we are intending to do with this property is to use it as a kind of hybrid restaurant but specialty market. I think the closest example that Savannah used to have was the Gray Market, where it's a place where you could sit down and have a bite to eat. You could also pick up food to go. There was a package store component. It was very well received. Obviously, with this location here, we think it will be well received as well. It's also received the support of the Victoria Neighborhood Association. I will say that we were previously scheduled to be here on the September 10th meeting. That was the date of the VNA meeting. We postponed until now because it was important to meet with the Neighborhood Association. They are fully in support of this petition to bring this use to this location. And I will say that's the important thing I would like to stress, that they are in support of having the restaurant and retail store component with the alcohol sales here. How we get that approved, I will defer to y'all, and my job as well is to make sure that we can get this site approved. We did not have any preference as to that path. When we initially met with staff, there was some concern about should we be rezoning the whole block. We only have control over our site. We thought it was in the best interest of the community to come back with the text amendment so that it would be limited in scope. I will say that if a rezoning is recommended, we fully support that as well. I believe the Neighborhood Association supports that. It achieves the goal of the Neighborhood Association's letter. But our intent at the end of the day was, how do we get a restaurant with a retail component at this location? We've been working with staff. We've been working with City of Savannah staff. We have a zoning confirmation letter in place that confirms the use would be appropriate in this location. But we do want to be respectful of the opinions of this board and find the way to get there that will be most appropriate for the neighborhood. So whether it's the text amendment or the rezoning, I would like to maybe hear from y'all so that we can answer questions for you as to address it and how to make sure that this good use and this good location can move forward. As was mentioned by staff, this entire block, despite being TN1, our adjacent neighbor is a law firm. We spoke to them. They support the request. On the other side is Sterling Seacrest, another office building. We spoke to them. They support the request. The adjacent corner is Bonfalligant, also an office building. And across the street is entirely commercial uses. We don't have any residential neighbors. This is a very different type of petition than what you normally see for the TN1. And potentially this block might have been left behind in NUZO. As was mentioned, it is future land use map, traditional commercial, which is not in congruity with the zoning as it currently stands. And so if we want to bring the zoning forward, we would support that. But again, happy to answer y'all's questions.
All right. Do we have questions for the applicant or staff?
Just as we kind of touched on in the pre-meeting, it seems to me that it would be a cleaner solution to rezone this particular parcel to TC2 in anticipation that the rest of that block will probably follow suit sometime in the not too distant future, as well as the western side of the park where that commercial development's going in. So I feel like that's probably a cleaner way to do it than adding text amendments to existing zoning. I also just had a question if that is appropriate, if the signage didn't reflect TC2 as being under consideration. Maybe that's a staff question or?
Oh, I can answer that as well. I think that under Georgia zoning procedure law, it has to be noticed between 15 and 45 days of the zoning decision.
This the city council.
Correct. Gotcha. So I think I can defer to Bridget and the city manager as well. But I believe if signs are reposted for city council, that's the decision-making body here. That's in full compliance with the zoning procedure law.
Thank you.
Other questions? Go ahead, Mr.
I agree with Mr. Coles on the approach. I think that's the cleanest way, especially considering that the future land use map calls for
yes.
TC.
Anybody else? Mr. Notrika? All right. We do have, I have Mr. Kingsley as a speaker. Would you like to come up and it's up to you.
Want to speak? You can. yes. Madam Chair, and Planning Commission, thank you very, I just want to say thank you very much for inviting me here and letting us, make this proposal to you. And I'm here to answer any questions you may have. We're not intending, it's not, I wouldn't really call it a restaurant. It's more of a Dean and DeLuca type cafe. Normally closing at 7, opening at 9 a.m. And I'll answer any questions you may have.
Questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Any discussion? I'm open for a motion.
Cole's motion to rezone the subject parcel to TC2.
Ross, second.
Second.
All right, I have a motion to rezone to TC2 and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Milder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens? Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. So motion passes. The second part.
Yes. So this is the special use request, which we have also had some discussion about the necessity of the special use permit in the TC2 zoning district. And so just to cover our bases and ensure the petition is not hindered, this is a request in essence to allow a special use which would permit an ancillary alcohol retail sales of alcohol for on-site consumption in association with the restaurant use or the proposed restaurant use at this site. This is the future land use map that we spoke of, which indicates traditional commercial use here on not only this parcel, but actually going all the way across on the other side of Whitaker. So And this is the zoning map, which shows TC2 already present on the other half of Park Avenue. And so, in essence, the if approved by City Council, we would see TC2 here in the middle of this TN1 area. So, just to offer everyone a view, these are fully developed parcels, also containing contributing historic structures, some of them. And so, if you are talking about this particular parcel at 17 West Park and others, no doubt, any of those modifications would absolutely require design review. And so the likelihood that you are going to see significant changes as a result of rezoning here is unlikely. To note for the record, the petitioner did speak at the VNA meeting on September 10th, and we received a letter of support from the VNA. The city already regulates operational hours for businesses that sell alcohol, but in the amended text that is being proposed right now, the petitioner is expressing anticipated operating hours between 7 a.m. and 11 p.m., which again is also consistent with the TN district standards that are already present in the ordinance. Again, just to note, the subject parcel is within the Victorian streetcar parking reduction area. And so for those first 3,000 square feet of any non-residential use on this parcel or others in the future, they would be entitled to that reduction in parking. With that, MPC staff, again, would recommend approval of the special use permit if required here on this parcel. Happy to answer any questions.
So a couple questions. So we're not certain whether or not this special use permit is required in the TC2 district. We kind of have two different opinions of that. So the vote is kind of a questionable vote in general because we don't know if we're actually voting on something that exists. The second thing is this recommendation is written for TN1, which has restrictions on open and closing times. Do we have the same restrictions for TC2, or is that something that we should put into a recommendation to specify that we don't want a place here selling alcohol till 3 in the morning?
So actually, it's a really good point. So this would then be TC within a sea of TN districts. The petitioner is proffering hours of 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. So in order to, I guess, cover that, the recommendation might include limited operating hours, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. And again, these are mirrored in the standards that were proposed here, 7 to 11. So the idea was that you would still capture it at 7 to 11 and offer the same thing.
Mr. Yellen, is your client okay with us adding that to the recommendation?
Yes, we fully agree to 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. And to answer your question, I do not believe the special use is required. I do not have a zoning confirmation letter yet from the city. Yes. So I would prefer that you move forward with the recommendation should you choose to approve it, so we don't have to come back and reapply. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Yeah, but that was for the first one. All right. Entertain a motion.
Coles make the motion to approve the maybe needed, maybe not needed special use permit, but to add the caveat that the operational hours should be 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Full second.
All right. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wawoody?
Yes.
I also say yes.
Thank you.
All right, motion passes. Thank you. And our last item is subdivision with variance 313537 Island Drive. Ms. Corin, I believe, is going to recuse herself. Ms. Roth.
Afternoon, Madam Chair. Commissioners, again, I am Brad Clement, still from Development Services. Once again, I find myself standing between you and the door. This is a minor subdivision with variances. This particular subdivision and a slightly altered configuration had been approved previously 12 years ago. There was a special finding attached to that determination. The establishment of the legal right of use for the access easement on Lot A by owners of all properties presently using the access easement does not approve or imply the approval of future subdivisions utilizing the access easement without improvements to the access easement as determined necessary by the Metropolitan Planning Commission and the county engineer. Those words written in the report are why we are here. Otherwise, this would be a pretty straightforward minor subdivision. The subdivision, because of its configuration, does require two variances. They are the same variances that were required previously, as there is no material change from what had previously been approved and what is being asked now. Some lot lines moved around the existing access lane or easement, but the lane itself did not move. The requirement for a variance includes private vehicular access easement serving more than three lots must be paved with a width of not less than 18 feet. The existing lane easement private drive does not meet that per county ordinance. A one-lot variance from the maximum of six lots, which can be served by a private vehicular access and utility easement to permit seven lots to be served. And again, there's some discussion about, depending on how much of the access easement would be paved, how much of it you get to a different lot count depending on the configuration of the lane. But as it exists, we're going with seven. This is on the Isle of Hope, just south of Island Drive. You can see what would be a flag lot, which is not generally preferred, but not illegal. The access easement in this configuration runs down the flag to serve these lots behind it. That part is not changing. This is a copy of the plat to be recorded, which would reconfigure the lots that receive access from this lane. The two lots at the southern end of the lane previously referenced lot A, lot B in the special finding. Ownership has changed between these two lots, and so the lot lines are being reconfigured to shift that lane over a lot for the purpose of maintenance of that lane. Given that the facts have not materially changed, staff could not see clear to change their original recommendations from the previous. MPC staff recommends denial of the variance from the requirement that the private vehicular access easement serving more than three lots must be paved with a width of not less than 18 feet. Same time, MPC recommends approval of a variance to increase the maximum number of lots to be served by a private vehicular access and utility easement from six to seven, proposed in the plat as I've shown you. We don't see how you can redraw this that will meaningfully change the number of lots. The only thing that could reasonably be done here is to change the configuration of the lane itself. As a mediative point, the staff does find that the proposed access easement shall be paved with either asphalt or concrete with a width of not less than 18 feet per the ordinance. Pavement shall begin at Island Drive and continue in a southerly direction, not less than 370 feet. 370 is not the total length of the access easement, but it makes some of those other things go away, and it cleans it up better than it is. And that is why we chose to use that language. Pending your questions, that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Is the applicant available?
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon. My name is Rusty Ross, and I am the agent for the applicant. I have the applicants here with me, Don Waters and Lucy Hitch. The Waters family control three of these seven lots, and Mrs. Hitch controls another one. So they, I guess, if you will, the majority is here. A couple of things to go back. I could take you back to 1915, when the what is known as the current house was first constructed and the first subdivision made, but I'm not going to do that to you. It's a brain drain we don't need. But I will take you back to 2012, because the same body considered the same two variances at that time. And the reason they were considering them is that if you look at the plat that you have in front of you on your screen, I assume you're looking at the same thing that I'm looking at. The whole purpose of that action in 2013 was to subdivide the Wayne Johnson lot from the recombination tract one. The person who owned the recombination tract, won the 2.3 acres, wanted to create a secondary lot. So that brought it up to the number of seven. So the variance was granted at that time for seven lots to access this private access way. At that same time, and again, Mr. Clements is correct, the staff recommended against simply leaving this as a permeable surface access way with crush and run with a limestone coating on top of it. And they wanted us to go to the 18 feet of paving and use concrete or asphalt. This board decided at that time, I believe unanimously, that that wasn't really necessary as well. These are all neighbors. They know what they want. And so instead of having a requirement, they granted that second variance as to the permeability, if you will, of the driveway substance and the size. If you went to 18 feet on this drive, by the way, from Island Drive on into the property, you'd have to cut down some pretty large trees. And that is always something that we try to fight against. And the second thing is if you put asphalt and concrete, well, obviously, the permeability of the property or the driveway ends. That being said, I get what we're here to ask you to do is to grant the same two variances that were in place and put in place in 2012, to leave the number of lots, seven lots, that is how many are accessing this easement width path, this private access point, and to also leave the road the way it is. And I'm going to ask Mr. Waters to step up here in just a minute, describe what he plans to do in terms of making improvements to this easement path, not hopefully paving it and making it 18 feet wide, but improving the access point with some beautification and some other aspects. So that is really what we're asking for, is that you continue the two variances that were put in place in 2012. Don?
Thank you, Rusty. Thank you, everyone. My name is Don Waters. My wife is the title holder of the lot at the end of the driveway. And my next door neighbor, Lucy Hitch, is here with us. And Lucy and I have talked for many years about centering the responsibility for the upkeep of the driveway with one of the neighbors. And so what we're doing is by redrawing very marginally the lot lines, the driveway will now be our responsibility. And we're fine with that because we want to keep it up and we want to maintain the surface and we want to enhance the plantings and so forth. So we thought it'd be a rather simple matter, since we all agree the recombination track one is now under our control. Recombination track two is my wife. The next door neighbor is Lucy and Mrs. Hitch. And then next to her is my daughter and son-in-law. So it's sort of our family property in a sense. And so I said, well, we'll take over responsibility for upkeep. But to get this approved, we were told we would have to pave 370 feet to 18 feet. And so right in front of my daughter's house are two very, very large old trees. We'll have to take those out. And paving, we've done some preliminary pricing, and to pave it that far is north of $250,000. Candidly, I didn't think that that was going to be something I'd have to do in order to take on responsibility to keep it up. It's been a gravel driveway as long as I've been at Isle of Hope, which is 50 years. So we just would like to maintain the gravel driveway we have. And also, just to be safe, I checked with the fire chief, and I've got a letter from Chief Christensen at Isle of Hope. And I told him, I said, bring your biggest truck and drive it down the lane and make sure you can go all the way in to all the houses. And we have a circular drive. And the chief did that and wrote a letter that said the Isle of Hope Volunteer to Fire Department has reviewed the property at 35 Island Drive. We are fully able to obtain access to the property through the driveway with our fire apparatuses. So it's not a fire department problem. So we would just ask if you'd let us continue doing what we've been doing and keeping it graveled and keeping it up, maintain the look of it, that's what we would like to do. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Are there any questions? Go ahead, Mr. Melder.
One question. I'm just so I'm not confused. Is the petitioner in agreeance with the staff recommendation?
What we're asking is that we not be required to pave it. The staff recommendation is that we make it 18 feet wide and that we pave it for 370 feet. And again, the pricing on that is approaching $300,000 to pave it. That's without considering taking out a couple of major, one's an oak tree, one's a big pine tree. And I would just mention that we went out and looked at all of the entranceways, and this driveway is perpendicular to Island Drive. Island Drive is only 10 and 11 feet wide for most of its depth. When you get close to our property, it goes to 16 feet. So this would require that we broaden the driveway and pave it, and it would be broader than the approaching street bed that goes to our driveway.
Any other questions? All right. I do see Ms. Hitch has a card here. Would you like to speak at all?
I would like to just say.
If you come up to the mic and state your name for the record, please.
Lucy Hitch. I live next door to Mr. Waters, and I've been in that property for 47 years. I'd like to point out that if we paved 370 feet, it's only going to serve us two houses. It will end before it gets to my house, to Mr. Waters' house, to the Curran's house, and the Goldbergs. There will be no paving on that end. I don't see the purpose of paving it. It's working and has worked since 1955 when the road was moved from in front of the houses to the back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I don't think so. No, the rest of them were. Any discussion? I'm open for a motion.
Coles make the motion to approve the variance for the requirement to be paved and also approval of the variance to increase the number of lots to be served by private vehicular access utility from 6 to 7 lots.
I'm sorry. The first one is
the approval of the variance from having to pave or widen to 18 feet. It's strange the way it's written.
Denial.
Exactly. Well, no, we're
denial of denial.
We are in approval of item one. Staff recommended denial of one, but I'm recommending approval of one and approval of two. If that makes sense as you read it on the recommendation.
But number one says it must be paved with a width of not less than 18.
That is the variance from.
Okay.
So staff is recommending that they do have to pave it and do have to widen it. And I'm saying that they shouldn't have to pave it and they shouldn't have to widen it and allow it to be as it stands now.
Is everybody clear?
So just no, to make sure, Mr. Coles. You are moving a motion to agree with the petitioner's request.
For item one and the staff's recommendation for two. So as it's written, staff recommends denial of one, but I'm recommending approval of one, which is in agreement with the petitioner. Is that correct, staff?
Why don't we just wipe one out and just approve the second one?
But they still need the variance.
Yes.
So we still have to include one and two. So my motion again is for approval of item one, not denial, and approval of item two.
Can you help us out, Mr. Morrow?
Absolutely. So the two variances that were requested, I thought I was making things bigger here. Sorry. Here we go. Yeah. So the first item is a variance from the requirement that a private vehicular access easement serving more than three lots be paved with a lot with a width not less than 18 feet. That's the first variance. And the board would, Mr. Coles is making a motion to approve that first variance. And the second variance requested is to have a one lot variance from the maximum of six lots that can be served by a private vehicular access and utility easement. Mr. Coles is also recommending approval of number two. So okay. I think it's a little bit clearer on this slide.
Thank you. Sorry. Any more questions? We've got a motion. Do we have a second on that motion?
Please. Melder second the motion.
All right. Okay, we have a motion and a second to basically allow the drive to stay the way it is and just allow the increase the number of lots. Ms. Amy?
I think my answer is yes. They can keep it gravel, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Ms. Ross is not here. Mr. Stevens?
Yes. Oh, sorry.
No worries. Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. So, motion approved. And we have one other thing before we... Do we have a slate of candidates yet, or do we need to wait for the next meeting?
Let's wait for the next meeting.
Okay. All right. We'll have a slate of candidates at the next meeting, and I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
Coles motion to adjourn.
Coles second.
All in favor?
By three.